10. Descent into Darkness. Commander Norton was sorely tempted, but, as captain, his first duty was to his ship. If anything went badly wrong on this initial probe, he might have to run for it. So that left his second officer, Lieutenant Commander Mercer, as the obvious choice. Norton willingly admitted that Carl was better suited for the mission. The authority on life support systems, Mercer had written some of the standard textbooks on the subject. He had personally checked out innumerable types of equipment, often under hazardous conditions, and his biofeedback control was famous. At a moment's notice, he could cut his pulse rate by 50% and reduce respiration to almost zero for up to 10 minutes. This useful little trick had saved his life on more than one occasion. Yet, despite his great ability and intelligence, he was almost wholly lacking in imagination. To him, the most dangerous experiments or missions were simply jobs that had to be done. He never took unnecessary risks, and he had no use at all for what was commonly regarded as courage. The two mottos on his desk summed up his philosophy of life. One asked, "What have you forgotten?" The other said, "Help stamp out bravery." The fact that he was widely regarded as the bravest man in the fleet was the only thing that ever made him angry. Given Mercer, that automatically selected the next man, his inseparable companion, Lieutenant Joe Calvert. It was hard to see what the two had in common. The lightly built, rather highly strung navigation officer was 10 years younger than his stolid and imperturbable friend, who certainly did not share his passionate interest in the art of the primitive cinema. But no one can predict where the lightning will strike, and years ago, Mercer and Calvert had established an apparently stable liaison. That was common enough. Much more unusual was the fact that they also shared a wife back on Earth, who had borne each of them a child. Norton hoped that he could meet her one day. She must be a most remarkable woman. The triangle had lasted for at least 5 years, and still seemed to be an equilateral one. Two men were not enough for an exploring team. Long ago it had been found that three was the optimum, for if one man was lost, two might still escape, where a single survivor would be doomed. After a good deal of thought, Norton had chosen Technical Sergeant Willard Myron, a mechanical genius who could make anything work, or design something better if it wouldn't. Myron was the ideal man to identify alien pieces of equipment. On a long sabbatical from his regular job as associate professor at Astrotech, the sergeant had refused to accept a commission on the grounds that he did not wish to block the promotion of more deserving career officers. No one took this explanation seriously, and it was generally agreed that Will rated zero for ambition. He might make it to space sergeant, but he would never be a full professor. Myron, like countless NCOs before him, had discovered the ideal compromise between power and responsibility. As they drifted through the last airlock and floated out along the weightless axis of Rama, Calvert found himself, as he so often did, in the middle of a movie flashback. He sometimes wondered if he should attempt to cure himself of this habit, but he could not see that it had any disadvantages. It could make even the dullest situations interesting, and who could tell? One day it might save his life. He would remember what Fairbanks or Connery or Hiroshi had done in similar circumstances. This time, he was about to go over the top, in one of the early 20th century wars. Mercer was the sergeant, leading a 3-man patrol on a night raid into no man's land. It was not too difficult to imagine that they were at the bottom of an immense shell crater, though one that had somehow become neatly tailored into a series of ascending terraces. The crater was flooded with light from 3 widely spaced plasma arcs, which gave an almost shadowless illumination over the whole interior. But beyond that, over the rim of the most distant terrace, were darkness and mystery. In his mind's eye, Calvert knew perfectly well what lay there. First, there was the flat circular plain over a kilometer across. Trisecting it into 3 equal parts, and looking much like broad railroad tracks, were 3 wide ladders, their rungs recessed into the surface so that they would provide no obstruction to anything sliding over them. Since the arrangement was completely symmetrical, there was no reason to choose one ladder rather than another. That nearest to Airlock Alpha had been selected purely as a matter of convenience. Though the rungs of the ladders were uncomfortably far apart, that presented no problem. Even at the rim of the hub, half a kilometer from the axis, gravity was still barely 1/30th of Earth's. Although they were carrying almost 100 kilos of equipment and life support gear, they would be able to move easily, hand over hand. Commander Norton and the backup team accompanied them along the guide ropes that had been stretched from Airlock Alpha to the rim of the crater. Then, beyond the range of the floodlights, the darkness of Rama lay before them. All that could be seen in the dancing beams of the helmet lights was the first few 100 meters of the ladder, dwindling away across a flat and otherwise featureless plain. And now, Mercer told himself, I have to make my first decision. Am I going up that ladder or down it? The question was not a trivial one. They were still essentially in zero gravity, and the brain could select any reference system it pleased. By a simple effort of will, Mercer could convince himself that he was looking out across a horizontal plane, or up the face of a vertical wall, or over the edge of a sheer cliff. Not a few astronauts had experienced grave psychological problems by choosing the wrong coordinates when they started on a complicated job.